Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. One, two, one, two, three, four.
Welcome to Sawbones, a marital tube of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Well, this is an odd situation we find ourselves in, friends.
Yeah, we did not foresee doing this show again.
Well, but if by this show you mean this podcast, we did.
Well, no,
totally
we did foresee that. No, I mean, we planned on it.
We did a bunch of live shows in the Pacific Northwest and recorded them all to share with you. And there was an odd problem with one of them, where Sydney lost her audio, and you couldn't hear Sydney, you could only hear me, thereby making it pretty much the worst podcast in history. It's a medical history podcast where a dunderhead just, like, shouts at the darkness is ill-informed
pauses
questions
for long periods of time and then reacts to seemingly nothing.
To nothing.
It was booby-trapped. We sat down at the table, which was mic'd for you and your brothers.
Yeah.
And you sat down at your mic, and I had to choose the Griffin or the Travis mic, mm-hmm. and I chose poorly.
Yeah.
Because the Travis mic didn't work. Do you guys do that intentionally to him? Do you turn off his mic intentionally?
Nah, not on purpose. So what we're going to do is we're going to try to replicate that show for you as close as we possibly can. So, here we go. Hey, everybody. What's up, Oregon?
Hey, Portland.
Portland.
Everybody cheer. Woo, clap, yay.
What's going on, Portland?
We're so happy to be here in Oregon, where we are.
I know a lot of stuff about Portland. I've been reading up, Sid.
Well, tell me, what do you know?
The land of ports. I don't actually know anything.
You don't know anything about Portland?
Well, we've been on the road. It's hard, you know?
And you tend to do all your studying on the road.
I tend to do
all your Oregon studies.
All my growth.
On the Oregon Trail.
Okay, hot shot. What do you know about Portland?
Well, I mean, not much. Just the obvious stuff that everybody knows. Like the fact that the only venomous snake in Oregon is the Western Rattler. That's like the only. I mean, but everybody knows that, right?
This seems like it seems like lame material, but trust me. It did gangbusters in Portland.
they love this kind
they
of
stuff.
They love
stuff.
Jokes about the Western.
They love jokes about Portland.
Rattler.
Jokes. I use that in air quotes. But like talking about Portland snakes, they love it. Why on earth do you know that, Sydney? I know why she knows it, but just
I know that because I thought we should talk about snake bites. Snakes and snake bites today.
So we're going to conclude our three-part series on putting pets on blast with the first part of our series, putting pets on blast.
Don't get confused. We're just going to talk about snakes.
Just snakes. We're just going to talk about snakes.
Now, if you are in Oregon, where we were and are in this fiction that we've created, you would know the Western Rattler, so that you're aware, because it has a triangular head, it has vertical pupils, it's olive brown to gray, and most importantly, it rattles.
It's a rattle.
It's a rattlesnake.
Rattle.
So. And that's important to know because not all snakes, of course, are poisonous.
What
right?
do I need to worry about?
You need to worry about rattlesnakes. You need to worry about copperheads, water moccasins or cottonmouths also, and coral snakes. Those are the poisonous ones. I mean, don't worry about them. Like, don't stay up at night worrying about them. But, I mean, if you see one, I would walk in a different direction.
Don't get bit by it.
Yeah. Just, like, don't like stick your hand close to it. About 7,000 to 8,000 people in the U.S. do get bitten by snakes each year.
Mm-hmm.
And only about 5 die.
So oh, well, that's, the odds are ever in your favor there.
Still don't touch them. But.
No.
And people have a lot of strange ideas about how to treat snake bites.
I would think so, yeah. Because you have to come up with something and out in the wilderness usually, right? You're not thinking about it and preparing for it. So you just got to try to see what works.
Exactly. And what's strange, though, is that now people do think about it and prepare for it and still do some really dumb things.
The one that I know for sure works is that you cut open the bite and you suck out the venom.
So the first one I'm going to tell you not to do is to cut out the bite, the bite and suck out the venom.
Oh, no.
No, that's probably the most common misconception, that when someone's bitten by a snake, you need to real quick, like, suck the poison back out or make an incision kind of in the wound and then suck the poison out of that. This has never been proven to work. And in fact, it can be really dangerous, because one thing to know about snake bites is that many of them are dry bites, meaning that they don't actually contain venom.
Mm-hmm.
So you got bitten by a snake. That sucks. Not trying to say it doesn't, but there wasn't any venom, so that's better. You're not going to die.
Right.
In that case, if you then were to cut open the wound and stick you or someone else's dirty mouth on it, because your mouth is dirty.
Sorry.
All, and mine too, our mouths are dirty. They're full of dirty, dirty bacteria that you don't want in an open wound. You're probably going to do a lot more harm than good. Even if there was venom in there, you almost certainly couldn't get it out. Certainly not all of it. You can almost certainly not act fast enough to get any of the venom out, even if you could through mouth suctioning.
Right.
And because like fangs are curved, you're probably not even sucking in the right place.
You're probably just getting a mouthful of blood.
Ugh.
Ugh.
Yeah. In general, suction does more harm than good. But people have been doing it for a really long time, so why do we think that it helps?
I don't know.
This probably goes back to Roman times. So it was noted that there was a certain people who lived in northern Africa, the Scyli?
Scyli or Scyli?
Scyli. Probably Scyli, but one let's say two. Scyli, because...
It's fun.
It's fun.
Gotta get your phone where you
Scyli
can.
Scyli people. P-S-Y-L-L-I of northern Africa, lived in an area where there were lots of snakes, and people were bitten by snakes more frequently because, you know, there were lots of snakes. And so much so that it was thought that they were immune to the snakes, and that they had some sort of like special relationship with the snakes and a better understanding of like snake bites and healing. And so it was also believed that their saliva, their saliva was kind of an anti-venom.
It probably started as a cover story to cover up the fact they're embarrassed about getting snake bitten again. Like, oh no, you don't understand. I have a very special relationship with this snake. I know what he's saying. It's just a back and forth.
I'm building up an immunity.
It's a cultural exchange, really, more than anything.
You just wouldn't get it. It's a silly thing.
It's a silly thing. You wouldn't understand.
So the story was that because their saliva had this special property that they could spit on your snake bite and that would heal it. And this may have been turned into a story of, you know, when it was once seen like one of these healers sucking the venom out of a bite or spitting on the bite, you know, applying their mouth to the bite in order to use their magical, you know, healing saliva. Mm-hmm. And then they both, you know, live to tell the story and pass it along. Maybe that's where this comes from. It is interesting. These people really milk this reputation. Like mm-hmm. they liked that they were known as snake healers, like snake
gurus, gotta have their something.
Snake charmers,
if you will.
If you will. They played it up because this was probably how some people made their living.
Mm-hmm.
You know, healing people's snake wounds. They claim that their breath could cure wounds. They claim that they could identify the snake that bit you by the taste of the venom they were, you know, sucking out of your wound.
I completely celebrate their opportunism. I do question, it seems like kind of a short grift to me. It seems like you only get a couple of those just really totally definitely not working before people start to question your prowess, if you will.
Yeah, but that's never true with this stuff, right? It doesn't matter how often it doesn't work.
You blame yourself. I guess it was too deep. I should have gotten here quicker.
And the fact is, think about it. Like I said, a lot of snake bites are dry bites. So the person probably did get better in those cases.
That's true.
Because there wasn't venom there.
Yeah.
I also, do you wonder if like they're like training snakes to bite people? I mean, there aren't a lot of, I mean, how are there enough people getting bitten by snakes to support this as a livelihood?
They just charge exorbitant rates. And they also do like the insurance packages where you pay them up front in case, at a decreased rate in case you get bit by a snake.
Do you think they like, they created that snake island? Remember we watched that documentary about that snake island?
Yeah.
You think they made that place?
I mean, it seems like they would have a pretty chill hang there. Nobody's going to bother them.
They definitely cornered the market on anti-venom and snake bite maintenance. And this was even who one of our favorite friends of the show, Pliny, would advocate you to go to. If you were bitten by a snake, his first thought was that you should go visit the silly people. He also noted, though, that if you couldn't get to them, if you're too far away, and if you're not there, like among these people, you probably are too far away.
Right.
If you just got bitten by a snake, then instead you could use something called a snake stone, also called a poison stone or a venom stone. And these stones, these weren't just, I mean, they were advised by Pliny, but there were a lot of people who used them. They were usually these like crystalline rocks. They're kind of these pretty rocks and they had marble in them. And so they had like a kind of pattern is what they look like. I mean, if you Google them and look at pictures, they kind of look like a snake skin pattern that just has naturally occurred. They were sold for a really high price. And you would just hold on to it in case you got bitten by a snake. And then if you did, that's when you deploy your snake stone. by dipping it in water and then drinking the water.
I don't know from an effectiveness perspective, from a working, in a working sense, I don't know if that would be a slam dunk.
No. No.
Because it's just a rock.
Yeah. It's just a rock in water.
Yeah. I don't think that even sounds particularly, unless it dissolved and fizzed, that could be very satisfying.
Do you think it was, this is where the pet rock comes from? Like the idea, like, that you should own a rock.
Maybe they're like, they bought these stupid rocks. They tried to cure their snake bite with it. It didn't work. Their brother still died. And then they had to cover up the fact they had spent $2 on a fake snake rock. So then they had to say, well, no, no, no.
No, it's my pet.
It's my pet. I keep it as a pet. Yes.
Pliny also had some other strange cures you could try. Roasted garlic in oil, which is delicious. Less delicious.
You cook the snake in roasted garlic and oil.
Wouldn't eat it. That's to make it pay for biting you.
Take this. You're delicious.
It's your last meal.
Yeah, right.
Less delicious. You could also try myrrh, tannin, curdled milk, boiled frogs, dried weasels, hippo testes, raw sparrow, dove meat, which just seems mean.
That's just terrible.
That's just mean.
You're the idiot who got bit. Don't punish the dove.
or bat blood with thistle. When I read these cures, I wonder if, like, you know those dice that you can buy, like adult dice?
Mm-hmm. Like,
you know,
one kiss on elbow.
Yeah, like that kind of thing. Like, do you think that he had, like, weird ingredient dice, like different parts of, right, like, yeah, body, yeah, parts, and then different animals, says, and it's like,
here's
dove,
his,
meat, bat, blood, says, hippo, testes.
Right here it says, rub fox oatmeal on your forearm. Huh. Okay, I don't know. I don't know how that's going to fix your migraine, but you heard me. I mean, the dice, you heard me. Not the dice. What are dice? Just me. Plenty.
That's it. I mean, I think that's the only explanation for, oh, where did he come up with these? I mean,
just straight off the dome.
Those aren't even closely related. Boiled frogs and dove meat. Like, how are those two things, like, how are they ever the same treatment for anything?
He's just taking a scattershot approach, I think, Sid. And maybe he thinks if he stalls you enough with cooking these different animals and catching them and cooking them and eating them, you won't come back to him for a refund. because you'll have died. You can't get him.
I didn't mean for this to also be the episode where we put Plenty on blast.
Nah, Plenty's our boy. No. What about the Native Americans? It seems like they would interact with a lot of snakes out the frontier.
They would, and they did. And before I tell you about that, why don't you come with me to the billing department?
Let's go. Okay, Sid, you were going to tell me about Native American cures for snake bites.
That's right. So
you promised.
I promise I will deliver. The Cherokee had lots of remedies for snake bites. So they would mainly have encountered, encounter two different types of poisonous snakes, rattlesnakes and copperheads. And it's weird because I guess they had like a reverence for rattlesnakes, but they hated copperheads.
That's kind of a double standard. That's weird.
The copperheads were total jerks. But maybe my theory is that it's because like rattlesnakes are at least cool about it. Like when they show up in the neighborhood, they're like, hey rattle, rattle. I'm here.
Hope there are no scary Native Americans around. I'd hate to have to bite somebody.
I will bite them because I will be startled by human presence. But copperheads don't do that. You just accidentally step into a bush and then
boom,
your leg falls off. That's not really what happens.
No.
That would be awful. It sounded more dramatic.
Right.
Included in the many treatments are some for dream snake bites.
What's your dream snake bite? Oh, gosh. How long do I have? I guess I'm on a beach. Sandy. It's warm. I got a daiquiri in my hand.
Or a pumpkin spice latte. Or maybe a
PSL. It's autumnal. The leaves are falling off the trees, and I got a copperhead just friggin' like latched bit down really deep into my leg. I guess this is my dream snake bite.
That sounds awful.
What are you
talking scary
about?
Because a dream, no, like a snake bite that happens in a dream, they thought was just as important as a real one and could kill you.
Okay.
So you had to know how to treat that one as well. Some of their treatments include tobacco. Sunflowers. There were lots of different plant species that you could try. Lots of things that would just kind of make you puke. We've talked about like lobelia before, just things to make you sick, which is based on, like, we've talked about this before, the idea that if you take something and it makes something happen, it's probably working. Mm-hmm. So something that made you puke or poop or pee a lot or whatever, it probably helped. There was an herb that was used a lot, and it was named aptly Rattlesnake Master.
It's a great brand.
That would work. And in general, your treatment was usually going to involve both like imbibing something and topically applying something, and then also maybe blowing some smoke from something else on it.
Cover all your bases. That's what I say when I get bit by snakes.
There are many, when we talk about like some traditional treatments, like traditional from India treatments, swimming in shallow ponds.
Oh.
Prayer, mud, various plant-based kind of herbal remedies. Sometimes, I guess, patients used to be urged, and maybe still to this day, not to go to the doctor because the belief was that it would get worse.
At this time in human history, probably not that far off.
Maybe so. Yeah, that's very true. In antiquity, a long time ago, a traditional Indian treatment may have been to tell you to go bite the snake that bit you.
Yeah. That doesn't help, but it makes you feel better.
And again, it's kind of like eating the snake.
And he'll pass the word on to the next guy. Like, ugh, don't bite Jerry or other people that are shaped like Jerry. Because they will bite you back.
They bite back.
They bite back. It sucks.
Listen, snakes.
Tell your friends.
We're putting you on notice. We bite back.
We bite back.
Or if you can't find the snake, maybe you could just put some dirt on it.
Yeah, why not? Dirt's good for you, right? As a 10-year-old football player's dad, like rub some dirt in it, be fine.
It'll be fine. On the western frontier in the U.S., the mainstay of snake bite treatment and treatment for anything else was whiskey.
God bless America.
and what should you do with the whiskey?
Drink it.
Yes, that's right. Just drink it. Just drink lots of it. There was a belief that whiskey had this magical ability to kind of like seek out. It was like a smart bomb. It could find the poison in your body and just like...
Whiskey is basically a dumb bomb, ironically enough.
There were many reports of people drinking up to 2 quarts of whiskey and being fine from their snake bite and, I guess, recovering
from the whiskey.
I read one because it used to make like the newspaper, like the you know, your local like mining town newspaper would publish stories of people getting bitten by snakes and like what happened to them. And so you get these like reports of like there was a 3-year-old who was bitten by a snake, but don't worry, we gave him a bunch of whiskey and he's fine. Also, he's got a vicious drinking problem now.
Perfect.
If the whiskey didn't work, you could cauterize something.
This seems so unlikely, but I'm glad to know there's a backup plan.
And I'm sure you are more open to trying cauterizing a wound once you've had a lot of whiskey.
Sure.
Because then you just... Yeah, it's basically cauterize like,
it. Go nuts.
It's basically like branding it. Just get some piece of metal really hot and stick it on there. Mm-hmm. Now, if you are a teetotaler and you want to stay away from the whiskey, then unfortunately, your alternative is you can make a salve out of egg and salt and gunpowder.
Boy, you are a... And by the way, don't let anybody question your dedication to teetotaling if you get a snake bite and you don't do the thing that the doctor tells you you should do. Like, that's a really... That's a hard line. You are not you are not a person looking for excuses to drink. I give you your credit.
This was a time in history where I don't think it took a lot of, like... effort to talk someone into drinking whiskey. Everybody was pretty fine with it.
Yeah.
You could also try taking 2 straws and sticking them into the bite wounds, like one into each puncture wound, and then pour some milk into them.
Oh, cool. That's like the most unpleasant thing I could think of to do with that.
Indigo and Lard was another popular combo.
Mm-hmm.
Indigo and Lard, that's a... Do you like that band? That's a great musical act.
So good. I saw them open for Flea Foxes last summer. It was amazing.
You could also try a poultice of some green onions and salt, which again, like, that's just yummy.
Yeah, you're making yourself delicious for the next snake.
Or another one, you could try splitting a chicken in half and pressing part of the chicken up against the wound.
How long?
Well, until the chicken turns green. That's not so great. Yummy.
That does not sound particularly delicious, though.
No. Also, salt, pork, and garlic could be used together as well.
Okay, now it's a dry rub. Great.
I kind of feel like a lot of these snake bite treatments were like a kid came running in and was like, "Mom, help! I just got bitten by a snake!" And she just grabbed like whatever
was in the kitchen. Like, here, make these into poultice. I got marmalade and hair gel and flour.
I don't think they had hair gel.
Well, it was
pomade.
Pharmaceutical hair gel. Was it just for casual use?
Go ask your father. I don't know. I don't want to have to deal with another snake bite today, Bobby. As a last resort, you could use amputation of the limb. That was sometimes attempted, but you probably didn't want to attempt that because, you know, we didn't have like anesthesia or
you want
sterile
your arm.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we're like, assuming you want your arm.
You don't need to come up with reasons why people would be at this point in time anti-amputation.
There were lots of, we weren't very good at it yet.
Right.
But you had to be sure to boil the limb in milk afterwards.
The one that's no longer on you?
I guess.
Okay.
I don't know what utility it would be to boil like your other hand in milk.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, that seems just adding insult to injury.
Now, in addition to the fact that we now know you should not suck out the poison, there are a lot of other remedies that are from like 200 years ago that people still try today.
Like what?
So one, a tourniquet. It has been thought for a long time that if you like apply a tourniquet, like the poison can't go any further. It's not going to get, you know, to your heart was always the thought, to get pumped to the rest of your body. So you just apply a really tight tourniquet to your arm or whatever, and then you'll be okay. That's not a good idea. You want the toxin to be diluted. You're also going to like damage the cells in that limb. Also, you might lose the limb because of the tourniquet.
Right, because it's keeping all of the poison localized, right?
No.
And it cuts off your circulation.
It cuts off your circulation, yes. I mean, it's more important. I mean, yes, the poison, but more importantly, just like the tourniquet itself is extremely dangerous. If you do not know what you're doing, don't use a tourniquet.
Right.
Tourniquets, this is like a little, here's a little public service announcement for you. When we use tourniquets in the field, it is a life or limb situation, meaning that, okay, we're going to chance losing your arm because the alternative is that you die.
Right.
And that's the only time that you should ever use a tourniquet. If it's not a situation where you're either going to die or lose the limb, don't use one. If you're not sure, just don't, leave it to somebody who is.
Right.
Good tourniquet advice. Don't ice it. People still think that. No, you need blood flow. Don't drink any alcohol. Don't drink any caffeine. I don't know why people are still thinking that whiskey would be a treatment for a snake bite.
They just want an excuse.
But don't do that. And don't try to trap the snake.
I see. I think that's important.
Why do you think it's important to trap the snake?
Because you need to know what bit you. So they know what antivenom to give you.
Some good advice that I was going to get to, but I'll give you a sneak peek, is to look at the snake that bit you. Try to remember some details about it.
You just don't need to capture it and make an example out of
it. Exactly. You don't need that snake. It's not like that's a little bit of magical thinking that you need the actual snake that bit you in order to make the antivenom. No, it's good if you can notice some details about it. If you can keep your wits about you and see like what color it is, what markings it has, did it rattle? That kind of thing can be helpful to the doctor that you're going to see. But trapping the snake is a bad idea. That's one of the stories that I have heard. Is someone who was bitten by a snake and their family captured the snake before they loaded them up into the car to drive them to the hospital. And in the car on the way to the hospital, the snake escaped.
Oh, God.
And so they had to like stop on the way to the hospital and like, you know, evacuate the car.
Right. Because snake.
Because there's a snake in the car, and wait till the snake like, you know, slithered out. And then they jumped back in the car and came. And so they didn't have the snake and they'd been delayed. So and somebody else could have gotten bitten. So in general, like don't try to trap a poisonous snake.
Period.
Just, you know, look at it. Like, you all have phones now. Just take a freaking picture. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, I really have your wits about you.
Yeah. The best advice for snakes is like, don't get bitten. For several reasons, many that we've already gone into, like, you know, it's bad depending on what kind of snake it is, what kind of poison it is. I mean, it can kill you. It usually won't, but it can cause a lot of damage, you know, to the body part that was injured. But also snake venom, snake antivenom is really, really expensive. Super expensive. There was a student at UC San Diego who was bitten by a rattlesnake, spent one night in the hospital, and was charged $143,989 for the encounter. Of that, $128,000 was just for the antivenom he was getting.
Hachi machi.
$128,000. So, why is it so expensive?
Because it's hard to make.
Did you read ahead or did you know that?
We've done this show before, but also I knew that one.
Okay. Well, that was pretty good.
Thank you.
How do you make antivenom?
You gotta milk it. You gotta milk the snake.
That's right. You have to milk the snake.
Yeah, it gets little nipples.
No. Milk is like its glands, the poison glands, okay. Like near the fangs.
Boy, that's a stay in school, kids. That's a tough job.
It is hard to milk a poisonous snake. And you have to milk it over and over and over again, and then milk a whole bunch of other poisonous snakes in order to get enough venom to then create an anti-venom, which is part of why it's so expensive. Also, there's some things I could say about the pharmaceutical industry that I won't, but it's more than just the anti-venom.
You just gotta know how to milk a poisonous snake.
Well, it's more than just that, but okay. It took one guy 3 years, 69,000 times to milk 1 pint of coral snake venom in order to make the antivenom to coral snakes.
And it took one jerk, one misguided afternoon in the hospital refrigerator to drink the whole thing.
Why did he drink it?
He thought it was a Capri Sun. The guy had been storing it in a Capri Sun pouch this whole time.
That's a bad idea.
So short-sighted.
After you milk the snake and you've got a lot of venom, you've got to cool it down. You've got to inject that into another animal. To create like the antibodies to it. Horses are used a lot because they are big, they live a long time, and they're really nice.
Yeah,
that's majestic. What I've read. They're nice about it. Like they let you stick them with the needle again, and we don't like they don't kill the horses. This isn't they're not you know they're not killing them. They need them to make antibodies to them, so they have to be alive.
Sure.
And the how exactly they do that and the horses come out okay is a secret, so I can't explain it to you. Okay. I don't know the secret. Like I'm not keeping the secret from you. I just don't know. But they make the antibodies, they get blood from the horse, they centrifuge it, and then they wait 10 years for the FDA to approve it, and voila, we have antivenom. So it's really expensive, and it's scarce, and it's hard to get depending on where you are. I don't know that it's readily available, like at my hospital.
Right.
They would have to order it. There's a cool story about a snake handler, Bill Host, yeah, who had a better way, he thought, of getting this super exclusive anti-venom. He just injected himself with diluted cobra venom for years.
It's a hard dose to get right. I mean, you gotta really make sure you nail that from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta be really careful with that. But he wasn't that concerned because he challenged it many times by getting bitten by snakes. Mm-hmm. Lots of times he lived to tell about it.
Wow.
He then went around the world donating his blood to snake bite victims. Because on the basis that his blood was an anti-venom now, and his wife claims that all of them survived, which makes him kind of a cool dude, by the way.
I'm suspicious of this dude. How did he know the person was going to get bit by a snake? You know, he'd have to be really thinking far ahead. How did he know where he needed to be to donate his blood to a snake venom? He's in league with the snakes.
Well, no, he would like fly there.
Right.
Like when they got bitten.
But like, and they didn't die in the interim?
I guess he must have already been there
because he planned the whole thing. Bill Host, snake assassin.
You know.
The Black Mamba.
I meant to mention, so that I told you they use horses to make the anti-venom.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of different animals you can use. The ones they like to use are horses, but I read that one article that said it's noted that another good option for this are actually sharks.
Oh, great. Like out of the frying pan into the fire, huh?
But they noted that that's a lot more difficult. It's more difficult to work with a shark than it is a horse.
No, yeah, I would say so.
I don't know who figured that out.
It's like you know how everybody calls sharks the horses of the sea? Although, wait a minute, no one does that because it would be insane.
I don't want to see a shark all hopped up on snake venom.
Oh, yeah. Right. Exactly. You're welcome, by the way, Sci-Fi Network. There's your next freaking movie. What do I actually do if I get a snake bite, Sid?
Stay calm.
Okay. Done.
Hold still.
Okay.
Call 911.
Got it.
Get to a hospital as soon as possible.
Okay.
You're welcome if you feel so inclined to clean the wound out with soap and water.
Can't. Too freaked out.
Okay. But you don't... Well... Okay, call 911. Get to just and let me know. I'll handle it. I will take care of it. That wasn't a general offer to the public.
Right, just
that was aimed at you, Justin. Like if I'm there, public, and you are bitten by a snake, I will help you out.
Nice,
but don't like wait for me to come.
Got it.
Because I don't know. I don't know that you got.
She's no Bill Haas. She's not planning these attacks ahead of time.
So clean it, cover it with a dry dressing, and like I said, try to remember what the snake looked like, but don't catch it, please. It's
unnecessary. Thank you so much, Portland. You've been an amazing audience. Thank you to those of you who are listening to this audio podcast that definitely recorded from this show.
Where we are definitely live in Portland and not at our home in West Virginia.
Yes. And thanks to taxpayers for letting us use their intro and outro song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. Thank you to them.
And I want to thank somebody, Maureen Price, who gave Justin to me a really sweet card and a super cool pen that lasts for 7 years.
Yeah, and thanks.
So thank you.
I didn't mention this, but thanks to the beloved fan in Vancouver that gave us the great books for Charlie. That was very sweet of you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That's going to do it for us, folks. Until the next time we get together with you. Should be next Wednesday, if all goes according to plan. My name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
As always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.